Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode. I am Michael Petro, and on the show this week, you've got me sitting down with makeup artist Christy Gregg. We get to talk to Christy about how she found herself A, wanting to do makeup, B, leaving the world of death as a mortician and moving into the movie industry, and then we end with her most recent film, which just came out on Friday. We get to talk to her all about the making of Violent Night, starring David Harbour, maybe you've heard of him, Stranger Things. John Leguizamo, maybe you've heard of him, The Pest. Beverly D'Angelo, Christmas movie icon, Beverly D'Angelo from Christmas Vacation. And a bunch of other really great actors that their names elude me right now. Alexis Lauder is in this film as well, too. We love Alexis Lauder here on the show from Cop Shop. So we get to talk to her about doing the makeup for the film, what it was like behind the scenes, hanging around David Harbour all day long because they had to figure out how to put that lovely beard on him and make it stick during all those amazing fight sequences, and tons more stories from the making of the film. So that's who's on the show. That's what's on the show for you, ladies and gentlemen. Another special features for you. This is our behind-the-scenes content. If you're new to us, this is where we do our interviews and talk about people who make the movies and TV shows that we absolutely love to watch over and over and over again. So that's, as mentioned, who's on the show, what's on the show. Item of note, December 16th, come see us at Wee Johnny's. Ladies and gentlemen, we're doing a night of fun. We're doing a night of comedy, and we're doing a night of debate. So what you have at 8 p.m., doors will open. In the first half of the evening, you're going to get some stand-up from Sarah Jane and Milan Horansky. Milan has done the show, and Sarah might be doing the show that night. You'll have to come and find out. And right after that, we're going to debate for you. We're going to be doing one of our favorite debates. It's the Secret Santa debate. It has now become a staple here at the Real Debaters podcast. What we are going to do is we are going to do three rounds of arguing why we are the best at shopping for Christmas presents for some of our favorite movie and television characters. So doors open at 8. Show goes on right at 9 o'clock. That's December 16th at Wee Johnny's, 177 McDermott Avenue in Winnipeg, Manitoba. If you're from out of town, it'd be great to see you. That would be crazy if you flew in for this. But for anybody in Manitoba or the surrounding area of Winnipeg, come on down December 16th. It's $10 at the door. That's for an evening of comedy and a debate. Money goes back into making this more of a success for you because we are now voted Winnipeg's second favorite podcast, the Uniter 30 from the Uniter magazine. You guys voted, and we became second. I didn't even think we'd be like 20th, to tell you the truth. So this is a big deal for all of us, so thank you very much. So come see Winnipeg's second best podcast, second only to our friend Sam from Witch Police Radio. Sam, I'll say it again. We are coming for your head, sir, and I mean that in the most least violent way possible. I don't think I've got anything else to tell you about it. You know the price, you know the date, you know the location, you know what's happening. You're going to see me, Charles, and Emily there for sure. And we're going to try to do more of these in the new year for you because they end up being a lot of fun. And the more you guys come, the more you vote for things like second best podcast in Winnipeg. I got to put that on a T-shirt so I can stop saying it. Anyways, I got nothing else for you. So I give you Christy Gregg. I give you some Violent Night. I give you what it's like doing makeup on dead people. We got into a really, she buried the lead on that one. I had no idea. Anyways, Christy Gregg, I will cue that reel and you enjoy the show.
Let's tidy up this tangle of film by putting it on a reel. Here is a motion picture film, 1,000 feet, 16,000 separate photographs.
Welcome, everybody, to the official space section of the Charter.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Sir, you're out of order.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Real Debaters podcast. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the place that asks that wonderful question. What happens when real life meets real life? I am in studio with someone who it's been about a month since we tried doing this. Our schedules weren't measuring well.
So,
because we did Doug.
Yep.
Doug Morrow for makeup, and that was supposed to be a twofer.
And I got COVID.
And you got COVID. Which, like, I mean, par for the course, right?
Yeah.
Everybody got it. I think I got it a week before or after you.
And yeah, you had it first.
I did,
and
yes.
And then rescheduled.
Yes.
And then I had it the second time. But actually, that was the third time I've had it.
Really?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
How have they all been for you?
All different, but
really?
They all sucked.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, at least, you know, some consistency there.
Yeah.
Anyway, so finally we've had a chance to get Christy Gregg, right?
Correct.
Ah,
not Greg.
It does look Greg.
It does.
Right? I've even been saying to everybody, I'm like, I'm talking to Christy Greg from Violent Night.
So
I'm
many
sure...
people do.
Okay. All right. I don't feel like an idiot. So we've got you on the show finally. So thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
The makeup world, I've heard much about you because Doug likes to talk about everybody he works with in such fond ways. Uh-huh. So I already know a couple things about you. And for a listener here today, we have a new friend in the house. We have purchased a kitten. Her name is Benny, and she's in the studio with me and Christy today. So if for any reason whatsoever, the two of us are like, oh, shit, it's because this adorable little kitten is biting into one of the many cables running through the room right now. She's too fucking adorable, and I think we're on, what, five
painfully
attempts?
Adorable.
Yeah, and it's been five attempts to keep her out of here, and she keeps breaking
just
down.
Just gotta let it happen.
Yeah.
Just go with it.
I'm not going to win this. So.
No.
So the reason we have you on is because Violent Night just came out last night. You were with the makeup department. You're the head of the makeup department on the show. Hearing about this movie for a year has been killing me because I'm like, I want to talk about it. I wanted to see it. I wanted to see if everybody who was like, Die Hard, you've met your match. That's what everybody described this movie as. But before we get into it, before we get into the nuts and bolts of this juicy new Christmas flick, we need to know who you are. So let's start off simple like we ask everybody. How did Christy Gregg get into film? What was going on in your life right before you were a makeup artist in the film industry?
Well, I have always loved not necessarily like beauty makeup, but since I was a kid, I was a junkie about watching horror movies.
Ooh.
And growing up in the 80s when parents didn't really care what their kids did, it was not like it is today. I mean, my best friend and I growing up would go, you know, our parents would give us $5 and we would go walk to the video store and rent a stack of VHS, like, you know, Sleepaway Camp.
Is this the 80s or the 50s?
Prom Night.
$5 goes a long way at the video store.
They were like, some of them are like, I don't know, 75 cents to rent, because none of them are really new, right?
That's
some
true,
of those,
yeah,
like, old classic horror movies.
The Blob.
Yeah, and we loved them, and we could watch, I don't know, I just loved it, and I don't even think I understood necessarily the makeup, but it, like the blood and the graphic parts never really bothered me. But my mom was an emergency room nurse for like 30 something years. So I think I was really desensitized to it because it was like a very common thing to, over the dinner table, everybody talk about their day. And my mom was like, oh my God, well, my day. And she'd say what she saw.
Yeah.
In, you know, what happened in the emergency room that day. And it never, I don't know, never really.
That's really
interesting. It wasn't really weird. And I remember when I was in grade 9, this is probably like, I don't imagine they do this now for liability reasons, but take your kid to work day. I went to
they
work.
They still do it.
They do?
Yeah, they do.
And I went to work with my mom in the emergency, like, and I mean, I just had to kind of, you know, stand back and watch everything, but
so they
remember,
put you a gown and,
yeah,
and you were
I wore like a set of scrubs and I had a lab coat on and, oh yeah, I saw some crazy
Oh, you were playing
stuff.
Make-believe at such a young age,
lady.
I
saw some crazy stuff.
No kidding.
Yeah, a man that he, I don't know, some sort of like a factory worker, and his hand got stuck in a machine and it literally degloved him. Like it peeled his skin completely off. And then another older gentleman.
And this is grade 9, right?
This is grade 9.
I had mine in grade 9 too.
14, so. 15.
Wow.
And another man who had a big chunk of ice stuck in his snow blower, and he thought he could just quickly go free it with his hand, and it took his hand.
Why? Why, sir?
I know. And my mom was like, oh, she's fine. She's fine. And they're like, no, I really, like, the plastic surgeon's coming in. I'm like, I want to watch. And I watched his fingers all get amputated, and yeah.
That's insane.
So
I thought I had it because my mom worked in hospitals too.
Yeah.
And I went to Ms. Accordia and she got me into the morgue.
I used to be a mortician student.
Are you? Makeup, obviously. I mean, it is a natural path. There's many ways you can play with makeup. And the
I
last
came
one,
about it a really weird way, I guess.
Because of watching your mom help degloved men in the ER?
Yeah, it just was always fascinating to me.
Oh, I'm so glad she's doing that because that means she's happy now.
She's happy.
Okay. Benny has found a natural warm position, I think. No, Benny, you stay there.
They call me a crazy cat lady for a reason.
Yeah. Everybody's going to see this because we're videotaping this today.
Yeah.
So they're going to see this lovely little fucker jump around the room and be the star of the show.
She's all tucked in.
Man. Okay. So mortician makeup. I don't even want to talk about movies yet. Because
not even makeup. It was like I went to school to be an embalmer.
Okay. Pause. Fucking bury the lead, lady. Like, okay. I wanted to do that. And I just found out at a very young age that I didn't have the chutzpah for, like, for science, for the medical aspect of it, right? The biological aspect.
Yeah.
But I've never shied away from the macabre and the dark and the weird. Like, I love oddity shops, right?
Yeah.
And seeing, like, a real monkey paw that people were wishing on and weird shit like that. So
yeah.
I was always very into death at a very young age, but I didn't have the skills for it. But, like, what's that path like? Like, how do you break into the fucking dead person market?
Well, it was, like I said, like, I think with my mom being a nurse,
it's sort of,
after high school, and what are you going to do? Well, you should go be a nurse like your mom. And my oldest brother, his wife became a nurse, so she went to nursing school. And I'm like, I don't know, it's, like, it's fascinating, but that wasn't really the avenue that I wanted. But I didn't really know what it was. And then...
And so, it's less responsibility when they're dead.
It's kind of true.
Like, you're responsible for how bad they look, not how they're going to come
and
back
it,
to life.
It honestly was never even something that was on the radar for me. But I had actually gone to makeup school first.
Okay.
And when I moved back here...
Where was that?
Vancouver. I went to Blanche McDonald. I think I moved back, like, the end of 2008. And that's when it was sort of like film was dead here.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a lot being made. It was just a lot of Canadian made things
stuff
that were happening.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was the same people that were working all the time. So as a permit, I was never getting calls. And I thought, well,
I got this.
I put all my eggs in that basket of going to, you know, makeup school. And I spent a fortune getting myself into debt and student loans. And I needed a plan B. And like, as tacky as it sounds, I watched 6 Feet Under, and that was like the greatest show on earth.
It so is.
And I'm like,
there's so many people out there.
That's it. Like, and it just, there was like this aha moment. I'm like, it's fascinating because it's, you know, it's all the things that I find cool about the human body.
Yeah.
But without the responsibility of being a nurse.
Yeah. Like, it's not life or death. It's just death.
Don't get me wrong. You can fuck up a dead body. You can turn a body green if you put the wrong chemicals in it.
Really?
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's great. So, okay. So you were inspired by a show, which I love.
Yep.
I love when the shit you make is what, the shit we love is what inspires us to do the
completely
thing.
Completely.
Right?
And how powerful is that? That, like, literally is something as silly as watching a TV show can like kind of put you on a different path in life and being like, oh, that's so cool. And there's a lot of it that, you know, they kind of glorify it in the way that, but it was HBO though, so not really, because it was very raw and, you know, they didn't.
The death felt very cold. Like, the death scenes were not amped up.
No, they were sad and they were depressing.
Exactly.
There was nothing.
They didn't abuse the fact that they were making a show about dead people to make it like this, like, look at this over the top dead body. If there was a freak accident, that was part of the story.
Yeah, I mean, the family themselves, there's nothing glamorous about that family. It was dysfunctional and it just felt real.
Richard Jenkins is brilliant as the dad. The dead dad.
I loved that show. Absolutely loved it. So then I thought, that's what I'm gonna do.
How much of what you did in the show, where is there a difference per se? Like, what do you say the show amped up, even though it's HBO? What were some of the things where you're like, oh, come on, that's not how we do things?
I think it was just what you saw on the TV show was a lot more PG.
Okay.
Some of the, like, the first body that I ever, like, with in as a student participated in embalming. I don't think anything could have prepared you for that, because in your mind you're like, okay, well, you know, they're deceased, they're this, whatever. I walked in and the woman, this is going to be graphic, so
trigger warning, everybody.
Trigger warning.
We'll get to movies in a second. I'm sorry. I had to pour up. I had to ask.
The woman had been autopsied, and I'd never seen an autopsied body. So I walked in the room, and, you know, her organs were removed, and her cavity was completely open. Like, her whole body was open, and her organs were out. The back of her head was off, you know, because they've
taken
cut
the
in the
yep.
skull
yep.
to remove the brain. And I was like,
okay.
Oh. I never saw that on this show.
Clutching your pearls. Oh, my Lanta.
And then I think after that, when you kind of see the worst, like, that's how you kind of break into it. You're like, oh, okay, so that wasn't that bad.
Yeah, all right.
And then it just, everything sort of becomes like another weird day of...
What am I going to see at the office today?
I didn't stick with that as a profession because film picked up and I kind of had to decide, do I want to carry on or do I want to do this?
And that job is, I mean, film is a long day, but death is when death calls, essentially,
yeah.
Right? Like you got to jump when...
Yeah, I mean, I think I worked 8 till 5:30.
Really?
So it was, yeah.
Okay, so that's not how they made it seem in the show.
No.
Everybody was like on call, running around, driving a limo at 3 in the morning.
There are some people, okay. But yeah, for me, when I was a student, that was my placement. So
because you're
after
in school.
After
school,
yeah. So then I got an internship.
They can't abuse you yet.
Yeah, at a funeral home. Okay. And then when film kind of started to pick up a little, it was like, oh, shit. Like
what
now
do I do?
I've gone to school and I've spent, you know, more money. And at that point, my parents were like, you're insane. You are not going back. Like, you know, it didn't work out. And it's the arts, right? It's hard. There's a lot of unknown to it. And it was a really hard decision to be like, well, this is a for sure. And, you know, having a Monday to Friday job and, you know, paying into a pension and doing all those
adult things.
Yeah. And I'm like, no, I just couldn't do it. My heart pulled me in the other direction.
So you're doing makeup for the dead, and then film in Winnipeg starts to pick up. So this is where you are in your life.
Yeah, and it's weird because I think it actually, that was part of my quote unquote journey, right?
Yeah, of course, the
and
hero's
just
journey.
Being like, you know what? I think that just made me a better makeup artist because when you see those traumas on, you know, on real people in real time, that when I watch movies and I see things on TV and I'm like, that looks like shit. That's not what that would look like.
I love that.
Yeah. It gives you a different perspective, right?
Well, yeah, because you have to build it from scratch, right? Like a lot of like when I look at a movie now, I'm looking at each department's, you know, work in mm-hmm. a film the second or third pass. The first pass, I'm like, I love this movie. This is awesome. I just don't want. But then I get more critical of not the film, but how the sausage is made, as I say. So makeup, I'm like, that's from scratch. Production design, that's from scratch. And costume are from scratch. Like, yes, the script is from scratch. It's created from somebody's mind. But when you start building the world. So, yeah, you seeing what real death looks like gives you a better perspective on how to build real death on screen.
Correct.
That's fucking neat.
And it's funny because that's when I went to makeup school. That's what I wanted to do was the prosthetics, the heavy hitting, cool blood. And
yeah.
And then I kind of shifted
away. How do I put the brains on the door?
I shifted away from it a little bit. But it's also hard when you have somebody like Doug Morrow that you work with who's, what's better than Doug? You know what I mean?
First guest we ever had, first guy to say yes to me. Like, I owe a lot. My confidence, I owe a lot to Doug.
Aw, same.
Right? Like,
same.
I wouldn't be tiptoeing into this water if I didn't have, like, this lovely makeup artist who said yes to me the first time when I was like, I don't know how to interview anybody. I don't think I actually know yet, but besides the point, you can tell me at the end of this. But either way, he said yes to me, and I was like, man, you're such a kind, fucking, rock-solid dude. So, and having that in your world, I imagine, has just been a blast for everything you've done, because you guys work on, like, you find each other in the office every day, I imagine.
And well, he's one of my best friends. I mean, I talk to him almost every single day in life, whether or not we're working. And yeah, I've learned a lot from him, but it's when I can't even pretend to know what I'm doing when I'm working beside Doug sometimes, when I'm like, oh shit, I can't do that.
Has he done his con thing
it's
yet?
It's today.
Doug, when you listen to this, we're fucking rooting for you, buddy. You're gonna kill it. Like, that's
I'm so proud of him.
Right?
My eyes welled up with, and people that know me, I don't cry. My eyes welled up with tears, and I was like, I'm so proud of you.
Well, that's when the audience is like, come to us, please. Like, we will come to you and ask you all the questions we want. So when you get to get picked for these,
and he's the only makeup artist on the panel.
There you go.
Yep.
There's a reason for that.
Yep.
I'm getting all fucking teary eyed right now. That's what happens when you're an adult stoner. Okay, so put a pin in that for a second, because I'm sure we'll wrap around Doug a few times during this. So we got death and movies. the title of your biopic.
Yep.
First film you worked on. How did the transition? So you just called up and said, hey, listen, I ain't coming back on Monday. And what was that first film where you wanted to take your debt, your school, and your education and apply it?
It was funny. There was some sort of mix-up in the office, and I got sent out to a day call on a movie called Heaven Is For Real.
Yes, with Greg Kinnear.
Greg Kinnear.
Yeah.
And it was for the hair department.
Oh, fuck.
I was like, well,
How long before they were you were like, I don't do hair?
Like right away.
Okay.
Absolutely.
You didn't try
right
to
away.
Fake it at all?
Well, I had worked in a salon when I was going to school, when I was doing my embalming funeral director's license.
Okay.
I was assisting a friend in a salon, so I felt comfortable with like coloring hair and stuff, but I didn't.
You're out of your depth, Donnie.
Yeah. So, and the hair department head was a woman from Atlanta, I believe, and she was so nice, and she was like, well, you know, you're here,
Christy?
Let's try to do this. And
this ain't working out, Christy.
Yeah. So, and I think that kind of was like the first taste of like, I mean, now it's very different because there's very hard lines and like.
The job has changed. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, be a team player. You have to be adaptable. And.
Well, yeah. And I mean, like a rising tide raises all ships and every one of you plays a part in the tide.
Yeah. And it was fun. And I just did that one day. Anyways, when they're like, oh, you're in the makeup department. So I think then Doug was like, hey, well.
Oh, so they just they just switched you. Like they were like.
No, that my very first day was a hair call. And then after that, I think I did a couple days with Doug in the makeup department. When he had a bunch
of
extra people.
So you guys have been, you've been working with him since your very first fucking credit.
Well, the first time I actually ever met Doug. So my dad's cousin, she was a hairstylist that worked in the film industry. Based out of Calgary, but she worked here often enough, I'd say. And Doug knew her. So after I'd gone to makeup school, she said, like, I'm going to link you up with Doug. Anyways, invited us out to the first Don Cherry movie that they shot here in 2009.
Keep Your Head Up, Kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's where actually the first time I met
What's
Doug
his
was
face
on that
from,
show.
From, yeah, because he was doing the
Jared
Kiso.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so I met Doug on that show through my dad's cousin. And so he, you know, but that was just a come out as a guest, you know. Kind
sure,
of,
yeah.
You know, you're not supposed to be here, but just hang around.
Take your son or daughter to work day, so
off
to speak.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So that's actually how I met Doug. That would have been in 2008, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But then the first time we worked together was 2012, I think that might have been.
And that was Heaven Is For Real.
Yeah.
I never saw the movie, but I know it was shot here. Doesn't the child die and come back from the dead? Am I right about that?
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's based on a true story, apparently.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're working on a film that's about coming back from the dead.
Yep.
Basically, your first film after working. Like, do you see the through line here?
Now I do. I didn't before.
Like, if you don't somehow fully come full circle back to doing at least one dead body before you pass away, I think it's a loss.
That's true. It would be nice to dust off the old tools. Just kidding. I'm very happy in my current job.
Okay.
It is nice having like a different kind of blood on your clothes.
Sure.
But although, you know what, it's still... The amount of times that I'll look down on like the bottom of my jeans or like, you know, my Vans, like the white laces, and I'm like, oh, shit, they're covered in blood. It's fake blood. It's costume blood. But nonetheless, I'm like, I just can't escape this.
That's funny. Like most people come home from work and they're tired, their back hurts, and you're like, I need a new pair of shoelaces.
Yeah. Like, they just always have blood on them.
It's a job hazard.
And that's why a Hallmark is nice every once in a while, because you're like, it's just nice to make people look pretty.
You raise a good point there, and it's a question I wanted to ask you. There are, I don't know them off by heart, but from what I've seen, there's your gore makeup, right? Mm-hmm. Like you slashed across the face. What Doug did to Jimmy, actually, when we did one of the episodes, Doug did real makeup on Jimmy, and Jimmy was over the moon about
it.
Oh,
awesome.
Because he was like, this is from a real movie. Like, this is a replica. And he, like, wore it all day, went to stand-up comedy that way, like, convinced people his face was cut open, like, really went and milked it. But there's your gore, and then there's your beauty, and mm-hmm. then there's your stage. Like, there's all these different kinds. Someone who's got 52 credits to her name, what are some of your favorites versus, like, if you could go favorite to least favorite, what is something you like? Because, I mean, you said you love the horror and the gore, but I imagine that takes a lot of time and effort where you know, beautifying somebody is also just as much a treat, I would imagine.
It is. And honestly, I think to look back, I don't really, I would say that it's not so much the makeups, it's the actors.
Okay.
So some of the, like, one of the greatest movies I've ever worked on was a Hallmark movie with Joy Lenz, Bethany Joy Lenz from One Tree Hill.
Okay, yeah.
And Andrew Walker, who's like Mr. Hallmark. And it was just the most enjoyable experience. They're just like the nicest, kindest people that you could ever want to work with. And I mean, they're beautiful, so it makes your job very easy. But it's kind of nice when, like, you know, every day's Christmas and everything looks beautiful and there's Christmas trees and everybody's happy and yeah. It's fake snowing outside.
And it's August.
Exactly, it was.
Right?
Maybe beginning of September. I remember wearing a t-shirt outside when it was fake snowing.
You drive by them when you guys are working on Academy.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, there's the Hallmark truck, right? Because you got the big candy canes outside. Like, it just, there's
absolutely.
This super concentrated area of Christmas in this un-Christmassy world.
Yeah, you see a cube truck and it's just glittery with Christmas ornaments.
Yeah, yeah, like a root, two reindeer being pulled out. And I'm just like, and it brings joy to my heart. I love being the mecca for Hallmark. Like, it really is.
And they're the company that shoots them here, the production company, they're wonderful people.
Oh, they're putting, what, 12 out a year?
They're doing a lot.
Right? Yeah. Like, we love our Christmas, it seems.
They're great to work for. They're just, they have a really awesome team there.
Does the joy of the story infect the set and the crew? Like working on, I don't know, let's say, like, working on, like Churchill's biopic, right? Like, that's about World War II. And,
yeah.
You know, so kind of drab. But a Christmas movie, is there a little bit more, you know, pep in your step because it's
absolutely,
Christmas?
Absolutely, yeah. Because, like, what do you have to be mad about or what do you have to be in a pissy mood for when you come to work and it's Christmas and people are making cookies? It smells like cookies at work. Like, and sometimes there's cute dogs that are in Christmas sweaters. Like, that's a good day at work.
That is, no, that's the thing is that you
nobody
guys.
Nobody died.
No, I didn't have to chop somebody's head off.
Exactly.
And do five takes of that.
Exactly.
Oh, that's.
So they're refreshing. And yeah, it's fun to make people look beautiful.
Yeah, no, I imagine, like, do you have. And we don't need names, but, like, do some people take more work to make beautiful than others? And I mean that from the camera perspective, not from their personal looks. Like, is there a perfect face?
You know what? I think I've been very lucky in my career with working with.
Oh, that's such a good answer.
People that are. Yeah. And I mean, but it's. It doesn't always matter. The most beautiful person can step on a movie set and, you know, without makeup on in certain lighting, they won't look, you know, it changes how they look.
That's the thing is the trick of the camera and the depth of the lens, like all of those things, I imagine.
Yeah.
Like, you see that meme online where they show somebody with a close-up all the way to a panoramic shot, and mm-hmm. the depth of their face changes.
Completely.
So I imagine that's a constraint for you in your department where, like, you've got to consider the depth of where the camera is so that their makeup doesn't make them look stupid, right?
Well, and it's hard because, I mean, the majority of our work is done before sometimes people are even at work, right?
Yeah.
By the time all the cast is done through hair and makeup costumes, that's when the crew is ready. So they only ever see them looking,
fantabulous.
You know, a certain kind of way. Yeah, yeah. So sometimes I enjoy it when they're like, you know what, we're going to take them for blocking first. And then it's like, oh, okay, you can see that they don't come in looking like this every day. And then you can actually maybe appreciate some of the work that gets done behind the scenes when you see that. And I mean, and I, that's not in, like, I'm not saying that every woman or man needs to wear makeup, but not everybody wakes up.
Looking like a 10. Looking like us.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Right? Yeah.
Exactly. It is nice that the odd time then when people are like, oh, wow. Okay.
I see what they're doing in that trailer.
I see what they do, because sometimes I feel like they think that we just sit around eating bonbons and, you know, drinking coffee and painting our nails and.
Yeah, right. It's only skin deep.
Exactly.
When really, like, the makeup department has got such a history. Like, the romance in the makeup department with the Lon Chaneys and the Rick Bakers and just how it's just changed over the years. I mean, cameras changing, yes. it makes everything look prettier. But like how you morph a thing, I don't think there's more history or story in any other department than the makeup department. Like I told Doug this. I saw the Universal Studios makeup museum that they have there, and they have Long Chaney's original kit.
Really?
And like stuff from Baker's shop, right? Wow. With like the original Wolfman and all this stuff. Like so many things are show, and I'm like, okay, great. Yes, the first motion camera did this and now it's doing this, but there's nothing really in between. Mm-hmm. Did the romance of the makeup department draw you into it, or did the was it really the gore? Like what was the what's the driving force for you?
At first, I don't think I had a hot clue. Like, it was just, I think I was maybe 25 at the time and was working a government job that I'm like, this sucks.
Yeah, I do.
The paycheck was fine. Yeah. And, you know, having paying into a pension and being able to retire early because I started at 18 or whatever. There was no creativity there. I just knew that I needed to do a job where I could use more than part of my brain.
Fair enough.
And I think that's probably the most amazing thing about my job is that very rarely do you have the same day twice.
Yeah.
It's constantly changing. And I mean, after that first day on set, I was like, wow, okay, this is it.
Yeah.
Like a group of weirdos, just like me.
A motley crew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And everybody gets to come to work and, you know, play make-believe and be creative and have fun. And that's, I mean, how many jobs do you get to do that?
I know of this one. I mean,
you know?
I mean, anything in the arts really is that, right? Mm. Like no two pieces of pottery are the same. No two songs are written the same. No two scenes are filmed the same.
Yep.
So yeah, you're totally right. Like in my office job, the reason my job is so awesome is because I get to play proxy to you guys all day long. I'm like, yes, I get the calls from set about what to rent and who's doing what in what scene. So a movie buff like me sitting in an office job and being a vendor to the film industry, fuck, sign me up over and over again, especially when FX calls and I'm like, what are you doing with this boom? How are you blowing shit up? I need to picture this in my mind. Can I come to set? Can I come to set? Is it okay? Is COVID over yet? Can I come to set? No. But no, that's cool. So pause that for a sec. We'll mm-hmm. We'll come back to some of that in a minute. But the process that you went through, I like everybody to know what it takes to do these jobs because they're big jobs. They're 200-300 people on set. So how did you what should somebody know if they want to be a makeup artist? The path that you went through. What are some of the things that you would highlight that you would want people to know to make sure they've gotten their toolkit?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I went to makeup school, and I know not everybody needs to go to makeup school. Manitoba is a place where it's not required, but you just have to show the same portfolio, like, you know, to be able to do an age makeup, to be able to do, you know, burns and cuts and bald caps and just practice.
So the school you went to was specific in...
Yeah.
Film makeup.
Yeah. So okay. It was a year long and it was the Master Makeup Artistry, I think it was called.
At Blanche
McDonald. So you do everything from...
Is Blanche a famous makeup artist? I'm sorry, I'm ignorant.
No, actually, you know what? I have no idea who she is. Oh. Come to think of
okay.
it. That's a good
Not
question.
One of those schools. Okay.
Yeah. And she could be it. Maybe I'm being ignorant.
Classy name. Like,
yeah.
You know,
Blanche McDonald. It sounds like an academy for young ladies training to...
It sounds like what you know? Blanche from the Golden Girls did before she was, you know, living with four other ladies in a retirement community.
That's true.
The Blanche McDonald School of Movie Makeup.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. So
I gave it some lore.
I learned a lot. I loved school, but I think it's challenging. I think there was about 13 of us that started.
Okay.
And
it's
only
a small, intimate group.
Of us
really?
Finished through the program.
It's like
the
Navy
through.
SEALs. It's like a 50% dropout
dropping
rate.
Dropping like flies.
Ringing the fucking bell, walking off. Oh my God.
Yeah, it's...
Okay, so what was so hard? Like, what was so hard for you and what was so hard for them, you think?
I think maybe some people that just didn't... Their heart wasn't in it.
Okay.
Or they realized it was maybe more than, you know, just putting liquid eyeliner and some lashes on. Like,
sure.
It's hard work and it's always hard too when it's art because you're judging somebody on something, but when you're critiquing, I mean, there's not one right way of doing makeup, but when you're putting a prosthetic on, it's either it looks like shit or it doesn't. You know, your edges have to be smooth. You want to sell it.
It's very binary.
It's got to look good, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so some people maybe had different strengths than others. So, yeah, it was.
I was in the military for a red hot minute. And I was a good crack shot. I could shoot.
Really?
Surprisingly, because I have glasses. I don't know why my aim is so good. What was one of your crack shot skills in makeup school? Like when they walked by and, you know, like I Art School Confidential. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie where like,
no.
So it's an art school. It's like a lampoon of art school. So they just make fun of, you know, artists and painters and sculptors. John Malkovich is in it. It's a dramedy. Kind of, it's very Little Miss Sunshine, but for art school. But anyways, there's scenes where, like, Malkovich is like, I was the first to do triangles. Like, dumb shit like that, right? Like, no one was doing triangles before me. So in makeup school, like, would the teacher come by and they would be like, Christy, well done on your severed head. Like, was there something that you really...
I loved character, and I still do love character makeups.
Okay, define for the listener.
So if somebody, like, I'm trying to think of a movie that's been out. Well, I mean, like, David Harbour.
Okay, go.
In Violent Night, like, that's a character, like, trying to...
Oh, that's a character.
Yeah, was it ever? I mean, that was a whole different beast in itself, because trying...
Him or the beard?
just the whole thing, and having, you know, an actor that was very adamant for how he wanted something to look, and then having, you know, your creative producers that, you know, and they're... So, I mean, that's... 87 North, like, they've got a resume that what they're doing, right?
I've seen every movie 10 times. I just, like, Bullet Train's the only one I haven't seen because it's just fresh out.
I haven't seen it yet either.
Oh, you'll love it.
Yeah?
It's fucking Violet Night, but just on a train.
I haven't seen it. Yeah, and then, you know, the director that has his thoughts about how he wants to see something.
Tommy Mercola, right? Mercola? That was his name, I believe.
Tommy Mercola.
Mercola, thank you. Sorry, Tommy.
Yeah. And
come on the show, I'll apologize to your face.
Yeah, it was challenging because it's not just the character himself was not just Santa Claus. He was Santa Claus. He had to be a badass.
Yeah.
He had to have this backstory of this Viking.
Right.
And little pieces of this all kind of had to shine through, but you couldn't give something away too easily. So, you know, it was like the Coca-Cola Santa Claus reference kept coming up and being like,
sure,
this pristine white beard and he has to be perfect, but also he's got to be like this badass kicking Santa Claus who takes out all these bad guys, and just finding a way to sort of marry all of those ideas. And I mean, we did a lot of makeup tests. I think David came in November, and we started shooting. Like, he didn't stay for the whole time, but I think we started testing with him in November.
Really?
And we started shooting with him in February.
Yeah, because that was a hard winter shoot for you guys. That was a cold one.
Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of different...
How many iterations, you think? 10, 20? Like, beard, hair combinations that you were going through?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of meetings at first, because the pieces that he was wearing in the wig were custom made by an amazing wig maker based out of Vancouver.
What's her name? What's their name?
Stacey Butterworth. Yeah. So
fantastic.
While she was building all those, there was two wigs and then two beards and mustaches.
And a partridge and a pear tree.
Oh, it was. And we had two. That was it. So it took 6 weeks. So in those 6 weeks, I was doing a lot of drawing at home, sketches of, you know, and even trying to figure out the breakdown of the character, because there's so much fighting that happens.
So much.
You don't want to get him, you know, he can't have his ass handed to him right from the start. And then it had to be a sort of believable breakdown of him, but showing a progression of, you know, from him to the end of, you know, when he's fully bloody. You don't want to give away too much.
That was what I loved. And you can see it in... You can see it in costume. You can see it in makeup. Like, as he progresses through the film, mm-hmm. the darker side of him comes out. Even though he's this lovely Santa who's talking on a walkie-talkie to this girl who no one believes it's really Santa. Like, that little part of the film always brought him back to the soft Santa inside.
Yeah.
As he was like...
And you, so we still had to always kind of show that too. Yeah. So even when, you know, he was covered in blood, there still had to be this sort of softness about him. And I mean, I think David did an amazing job of, you know, with his performance and showing that. But when, you know, you look like some crazy axe murderer because you're, you know, couldn't be a bloodbath too soon.
Yeah.
But into the movie.
When it becomes a bloodbath, fuck, is that fun.
Yeah, so it was a lot of drawing. Like, I would just sit down and, you know, have meetings with the producers and say, like, okay. And then with the stunt coordinator, because they made these amazing stunt videos with their stunt team dressed up sort of as the characters. And then it would be like a pause moment and being like, okay, I think this is where maybe he gets... Something is going to happen. Where do you want to see it?
Oh,
like,
wow,
is it
going to
be this punch where it happens? So then I would draw, you know, I had a photo that I made of David's face. And
I'd
be like, okay, so scene whatever, 16 or whatever, you know, this is where this is going to happen. And then just sort of building that character until the final version of, like, you know, he gets sliced in the leg, and a lot of things changed as we went along.
Do you do that a lot, or was that something unique to Violent Night?
That was like next level, because it all happens in one night too, right?
Exactly.
So tracking for continuity had to be something that, like, once we establish this, we are married to this.
Yeah. It's in the can. Like, you can't fuck with it too much after the fact.
But there, I mean, as with anything, in a perfect world, that would have been how that went.
Yeah.
But
film's not perfect, kids.
Stunts changed, and then, you know, so it was constantly working with, and the stunt team was absolutely unbelievable. I mean, they were like world class, top notch.
Who is it the stunt team from John Wick? Is it the same stunt, the six something, or
JoJo was the stunt coordinator's name.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think they did the John Wick, they did the Matrix. I think
nobody...
JoJo was the stunt coordinator on Black Panther. Like, their resumes are unbelievable, and they're just like the nicest team of people you could ever want to work with.
Or get your ass handed to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're going to get beat up by somebody, it's
so
nice
is
to be those people.
I was watching it last night. Let's just talk about it, because it's so much fun. I was watching it last night, and all I kept thinking was, when he fights, how much work are you doing to put that beard back on? Like, an action movie for a makeup department must be a little bit harder, because it's like you've got these fight scenes, what you've set that you want people to see obviously moves or shifts. Like, in a perfect world, like you've said, wouldn't it be nice if everything just stayed in place? But I imagine this was a lot of
work like that.
No, it doesn't. Like, a lot of reset. And you're saying, so what was that? What were some of the nightmares of keeping Santa looking like Santa?
So the beard conversation happened very early on.
It's a great beard, because mine does the little wavy lines too.
Yeah. And
when it gets long, and I was like, that's a natural curl.
No, that was all hand curled by me.
Well done.
So the whole thing was trying to make this Santa Claus, and David grows a great beard, but he was really adamant about wanting to keep it if possible, because he was doing a lot of his own stunts.
Really?
Yeah. So just for his comfort.
He's a big boy. I'm not surprised.
Yeah. And he did have a stunt double, and who was absolutely amazing too, but he did a lot of his own stunts.
Very
so
cool. Very cool.
For the comfort of everything.
And who went up the chimney?
That was his stunt double.
Okay.
And falls off.
Okay, yeah.
I actually have a video of that on my phone.
Oh, we need to watch that.
And it was a Ryan guy from Vancouver. He was really nice. But that was a big, big conversation. And we would go back and forth. And they were like, well, what about bleaching it? So they brought David in while he was here, end of November, beginning of December. Stacy Mendoza, who's the hair department head, so amazingly talented. They had said, well, what if you bleach David's hair out? Like, we want it white. And we're like, well, it's not ever going to be that Santa Claus white that you guys want.
Yeah.
So she bleached David's hair, and they're like, I think they kind of realized it's going to have to be, it's a character.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, yeah.
It's the wig, it's the beard, it's the
mustache.
And
it's known globally.
Yeah. And David had a good beard. And you know, I kept saying, like, this is your call. Like, if you want him to look like this kind of Santa Claus, and it was constant, like a constant conversation. So when we did the...
I'm so glad that that's what happened. Like, I really do appreciate how much work went in, because you were tackling Santa.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit of pressure, I imagine.
And it's hard because David is a perfectionist, and he, and I'm not, like, no fault of his own. Like, I think it's wonderful. He had a lot of really strong thoughts about how he wanted the character to look. And the only way that we were ever going to be able to give them what they all wanted was with the wig and the beard. And I know he held on for dear life and tried as best as he could to try to hold on to it. But so we'd be like, okay, we're going to go with the pieces. So we do like a wig wrap on his head.
Yep.
And send everything off, and for his face, so that Stacey Butterworth can get the pieces started, because it takes about 6 weeks.
Wow.
And the amount of times we went back and forth, and we'd get an email being like, okay, so I think maybe we're going to go with trying to color the beard again. And I'm like, oh, my gosh.
Oh. Okay, this is getting a little redundant.
So the first test, and it's nerve-wracking, right? Because it's like, well, we shave the beard, there's no going back.
Yeah, we're committed to the wrap now.
Then that's it. Then we're using the pieces. And there was a, you know, what if you try to keep his mustache? And can you keep the mustache and then just kind of lay hair? And I'm like, well, we can do all those things, but it's not going to look the way that you want, because I'll never be able to color the mustache to match the beard perfectly. So there was a sort of a moment, and Kelly McCormack, the producer, she's like, I see it now. Just shave it all off. Like, all right. And, you know, you have all the producers, you know, standing there watching you work. It's like, okay.
Well, and that's the decision makers. That's where the weight lands. If it doesn't go well,
And I mean, the first version of the beard that we put on, literally, I think we got that day from FedEx. So it hadn't been trimmed. It hadn't been colored. And then it's like that, okay, it's not going to look like this. Like, now we can talk about how we want to perfect the beard, the mustache, and the wig. Because when we put it all on him, he kind of looked like maybe a little bit more Charles Manson as an older gentleman.
I mean, that's one way to play it.
And we're like, okay, no, but like, just trust. Just have some trust.
Yeah.
We're gonna get there. And I mean, Stacey is heard. Stacey Mendoza.
Yeah.
Even just trying to find the right color to color, because everything was sort of like a blonde white.
Yeah, it's that fucked up blondissima look that I used
to
get when I tried to dye my own hair blonde and be like Nick Lachey or some sort of iteration of a Backstreet Boy. Yeah, no, I did that. Go on.
Yeah, and it's so as and she just did it the one time, and she just nailed it. Saw the color, and we were like, oh, yes.
Oh, you guys all.
Yes, Stacey.
And like that, whoever did DeLuca.
Laura
DeLuca. The underneath the Santa costume was this Viking style, like.
The vest that you see just a little peek.
Right,
at. So
yeah.
It's like gives you a little, what's Santa wearing under there? But it's all to be revealed in time, right?
You get to do a second character makeup. Because you get to do Viking as much as you get to do Santa, right?
Yeah. So
when you got the script for this, was it something that immediately attracted you to it because of that kind of switch? Spoiler alert, everybody. Santa is real. He's of Viking descent. And they give him like a Viking Saint Nick like name too. I was like, this is all so good. But he says it in like five different languages. You know, like just the catchphrases alone. Like what really pulled you in after reading the script that you were like, I need to do this film?
I laughed my ass off when I read it, and it all kind of happened pretty quick. It was funny how the show even kind of came about, because I was working on a different show, a movie called Champions.
Yes,
and. Right,
that's
when,
Farley Brothers, right?
Yeah, Farley.
Farley.
Yeah. But it was just Bobby. It wasn't Bobby and Peter.
It wasn't something about Mary again, is what we're saying. But Woody Harrelson starred in that, right?
Yeah, in Champions?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, so we were working on that show, and the executive producer from Violent Night was old good friends with Bobby Farrelly, so he came to set to visit, and I didn't work on Nobody, so I didn't, you know, I didn't have any sort of, I didn't know who he was.
Yeah, sure.
But Stacy, my partner, she had worked on it, and he said, oh, okay, so, you know, Stacy's doing our show. Should I hire you? And I'm like,
yes.
kind of, he's kind of an intimidating looking man.
Sure,
he's got
yeah.
this gruff New York accent.
Should I hire you?
Yeah. And he's like, oh, okay, well, you know, I was talking to Bobby about you. I'm like, and so then a little bit later, Woody comes up to me and he's like, who is that guy? Like, or do you know him? I'm like, no. He's like, he was asking if I should hire you because I think they might have worked together on Kingpin.
Oh, really? Okay.
And I could be wrong, but I don't know if Mark and Woody had worked together on that show. And he's like, he asked if I should hire you. I'm like, oh, God, this is so intimidating.
Like, you don't ask me that question.
Yeah. And then he says, oh, so I hear you know Michelle Monaghan. I'm like, oh, I worked.
Because you did Blood.
I worked with her a couple years ago. And he's like, yeah, well, she says really nice things about you. I'm like, what? So he really vetted me. He did his homework.
No kidding.
And he said, you know, she, thank God, gave you a really, like,
yeah, yeah.
beautiful, glowing recommendation, and you got the job. I'm like, oh, okay. And then it was, like, hit the ground running.
So
like,
three flaming hoops with alligators underneath.
Pretty much.
Each of them coming
pretty
with,
much.
Should
and
I hire
think
you?
He might have finished it with... Don't fuck it up. And I'm like, oh, God.
Oh, my God. That's such classic Hollywood shit. I love it, right?
Yeah,
you love it, but, like, you hate it at the same time.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, I feel like a little bit of pressure.
No kidding.
And it just, like, literally, right from the... We were doing 6 day weeks on Champions, and then on our Sunday, on our day off, Stacey and I were doing... Started prep on Violent Night, so we were working 7 days a week for a while.
Hair and makeup... is something the Great Bedfellows, right?
Mm-hmm.
They you can't have good makeup without good hair. You can't have good hair without good makeup, I feel. And so Stacey, like, I mean, I know Stacey Dawn is who we're talking about.
Yeah.
I've seen her online. I've seen her work. Stacey, you're more than welcome. We should have had her here today. I didn't even think of that. Fuck. I'm still learning.
Another time.
Yeah, another time. We'll get all three of you here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do a super panel. But do you guys, like, that's the department you talk with the most, I would imagine, out of your daily life on set?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And again, Stacey's, she's my left side of my heart.
Oh, like, wow.
Yeah.
That's a lovely set of words.
Yeah, I don't have enough nice things to say about her.
Whose idea was it to give the samurai ponytail to him at the end? Because I thought that was fucking
the man bun.
The man bun.
So there's a funny story, and I don't want to speak on Stacey's part here, but it was, I think it was Kelly McCormack's idea, and it was kind of like, you want to put him in a fucking man bun?
Yeah,
Santa
you do.
Claus? What? And... how she made that look so perfect and effortless. And because I'm like, Santa's going to look like a hipster.
He does.
How does Santa look like it? And it was like literally watching magic. And she was like, okay, because he already had the wig on.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, he finds something and she's like, well, how about like a nail? You know, something that would be on the ground in the...
something to put through the bun.
In
yeah.
the barn.
Yeah.
And it was like watching Edward Scissorhands. She's like, you know, pulls his hair up and all of a sudden starts pulling pieces out because to make it look like
yeah, like
undone,
the shovel. Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And she's, you know, the scissors are flying everywhere and she's yeah, snipping
Edward
all
Scissorhands
these.
Is perfect.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden it was like, holy shit, that looks good.
Yeah, it does.
And I not that I doubted her ability to do it, but and that's how Kelly and David Leitch, like, just the down to the finest detail thinking of, you know, and they were very amazing with letting us have a lot of creativity for how we wanted things to be. But
well, I imagine, like, you in stuff that you've done, like Blood with Monaghan, like, you've got a look that you have to obtain. Once you get it, you get it.
Mm-hmm.
And that look has been done. There's variations on the play. I don't think there's a lot of stuff that you could look to besides the Coca-Cola Santa so that you had, I would imagine this would have given you a lot of creativity to be like, okay, this is our Santa and this is the Santa that's never done this before.
Yep.
So we need everybody's input as opposed to this is the Santa we want. Okay, listen, no more conversation. Like that must have been a little bit another level of awesomeness to the film, so yeah. to speak.
And it's, again, you kind of have to sell it as a little bit of everything. So showing a little bit of a decline, but not shooting yourself in the foot because you're not, you know, you don't shoot a movie in order. So you got to go from pristine Santa at the beginning to undone, quick cleanup. Oh, by the way, we're going to go back to scene 12 where he doesn't have a drop of blood on him, but you know, we don't have time to fully remove all the pieces, wash them, reset them. It's a lot of thinking on your toes. You can't, it's subtle changes, but they're changes to be able to show, okay, well now he's killing everybody. You don't want him to look too Coca-Cola Santa Claus, right? Because he's got to look kind of badass.
Exactly. That was my, like when I heard Die Hard, You've Met Your Match from a couple of you guys who told me about it. And I was like, I can't wait for this. And like everything that comes through Winnipeg, I watch. Bad, good, indifferent. I don't care. I pretend to be highbrow, but I'm really not. It's all an illusion. And so I'll give anything a shot that's shot here because I want to do a series on the show where we watch everything, the first movie that was ever made here, to the most recent movie that was ever made here.
Oh, cool.
And we do a commentary about it, and we get you guys in on it to tell the stories about what was going on, what was making. So, like, we'd have you back, and we would do the Greg Kinnear film.
Names Heaven Is For Real.
Heaven Is For Real. Like, we'd watch Heaven Is For Real, and you can talk about it, but that's neither here nor there. But you'd said to me that you barely go see movies because you work so much, and that makes perfect sense. Like, you make the thing that we all love, and after a while, does the love of it fade away to go see it? Or when you watched this last night, did it, like, do you save it, I guess is what I'm saying, so that you don't spend it on every film so it does go away? Or
yeah, I think for me it's like by the time we're done, I feel like I've seen the movie 100 times.
Oh, so that is essentially it?
Yeah,
because you've seen, like, it built, so
I know how this is gonna, I know the ending.
Okay, now watching it last night, what was that like watching your work? Because there's something that's interesting that I want to point out here, listener, is that this is, I believe, your first head department credit, right? Or have you done that a couple times before?
Oh, no, I've...
Oh, you have had it. Okay.
Since maybe 2014 or 2015.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but this was... The
IMDb doesn't have it, like, they've got you coded wrong then, so you should...
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I've been a department head for a long time, but
okay.
This was just the biggest thing. I mean, I did Dark Harvest last year in the fall, which isn't out yet. It was supposed to be out. I don't know what happened to that movie, but...
You guys built a small city downtown for that movie.
Yeah.
That was a really cool set.
And that was a beast in itself, but I just... Violent Night is... I don't think anybody's ever done anything that size here before.
No, you're right, and doing such great work on it is going to bring it back. You and Doug and everybody who's involved in making such, like, the thing that everybody always gives Winnipeg shit for is it's Winnipeg, right? But Winnipeg can bump out a Hollywood level movie just as good as LA can.
Well, and I think a lot of people don't, not a lot of people, small minded people maybe don't realize we work all the time here. You know, in bigger cities sometimes, and they have, you know, thousands of members just in hair and makeup alone. Sometimes they only might work on one or two shows in a year.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I want to work, I can do, you know, it's very common to do 5 or 6 movies in a year because we just work and work and work, and we don't have the big size, you know. It's grown a lot. I mean, we've doubled our membership in the last probably 2 or 3 years. But I've just never done anything of that level of...
Were you having moments where you were like, what the fuck is happening? How am I here? Like, does FOMO... Not FOMO. Fear of missing out. You're there. You're not missing anything. Does imposter syndrome kick in at all? Like, are these things that going through your mind, or you're just cool as a cucumber now? And
I think the biggest thing, because I've watched so many of the movies that 87 North has done... I know the caliber of work that they make. I just want to do the character I want to do it justice.
Yeah.
And I know I have the skills to do it, but that was a beast of a show. It was a beast of a show. And it was, I mean, we shot that in like, I don't know, 8 weeks or something.
You were fast.
Like, it was crazy.
You were very fast. You made everybody at United Rentals very happy because you were like, another boom, another boom, another
yeah.
boom. And I was like, we have everything on rent to these guys. Like, it was one of the biggest productions I had ever supplied for.
Yeah.
It was a big one. And it wasn't, I'm not complaining at all. It was just very busy. And they usually don't get that busy, that many phone calls a day. So I was like, something's up here.
It was crazy. And a lot of the stuff from the original script that I read to what actually transpired, like the finished product, it changed a lot.
Really? How much?
A lot of the, I mean, just stunt and kill wise, okay. They changed a lot of things. I don't know, and this could just be sort of my interpretation of it. Maybe when they realized or started to see some of the stuff that Winnipeg could turn out, it was like, oh, okay.
Let's do this.
We can do that. Let's do that. Let's do that. So the kills were getting bigger. Stunts were getting bigger.
So were you
My budget was getting bigger.
Okay. You meant, and as I was sitting there watching that hammer come out, I was like, which one of these is Stacey's favorite? Which gore shot was your favorite to do?
I don't know. They were all kind of fun. I like the Home Alone stuff.
Oh, my God.
And I mean, Doug Morrow was the one who did... He was doing the makeup effects.
Yep.
But my heart was very attached to all of those things
sure.
because Doug was working on another movie at the time when we were prepping. So I said, I want you on the show. I will do whatever it takes. Like, we got to do the show together. I'll do all the prep for all that stuff. And then I'll just fire you off all the info. I'll tell you what you need to build. Like, we're going to do whatever to make it work.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Did they shoot that stuff early? Did they shoot out the Home Alone stuff early in sequence? Or was that, like, did they chronological most of it? Or was that.
A lot of it actually was, we shot in order.
Really?
Yeah. It was just chaotic. I mean, we had two units going in the studio for a big chunk of our studio time. And it was just. There was blood, 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 blood. You watch this, I'll watch that. You go there. We started the show with two of us, then it went to three, then it went to four, and then there was four or five in the... Yeah, our trailer, wow. It was just chaos, absolute chaos, but we made it work, and we had so much fun, but it was like the tattoos, for instance.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about, okay, I saw a snowflake in one chest piece. Mm-hmm. I missed what was in the other one. What was on the other one? Was it like a reindeer? Was it
like
a cookie?
I have the photos on my phone. I can't remember. It was some sort of like symbol.
Okay.
On his chest.
They were all very like early Viking tribal-esque.
So it's funny how, so the artist who designed all of the tattoos for David's body.
You mean those aren't real?
They're not real, unfortunately. They were the bane of my existence for,
okay, talk about
for
it.
Many months. So in the original script, Santa gets sliced or something in the arm, and he's supposed to just sort of peel off his jacket to expose the upper half of like his left arm or something, and he stitches it up.
Oh, I see how they changed
Something
it.
Something changed. I don't know if it, you know, stunts were like, well, he's going to maybe get cut here. And anyways, it ended up changing. So it was supposed to just be one sort of like a sneak peek of, oh, why does Santa have tattoos and some scars? The man that actually designed them, when I was working on Run with Doug, Sarah Paulson had actually brought her own makeup and hair team from American Horror Story. She's been working with them for years.
I've heard that. Yeah, that's her. Yeah.
Michelle Siglia and Erin Kruger McCash.
Those are
and they were
fucking. That's a team.
Oh, powerhouse women. But like you couldn't ask to work with nicer women. Super lovely, super talented. And I didn't get to work with them that much because for the majority of that movie, it was Sarah and Kira, like the
daughter,
the two of them, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So Doug would be there with Kira. So I only ever came in if there was heavier, you know, it was
some heavy lifting was
maybe
required.
3 weeks of work on the whole show.
Okay.
But, Aaron's husband, Mike, came to visit while we were shooting. And, you know, we sat and had lunch one day. I think it might have been Aaron's birthday. And super nice gentleman. He's a makeup artist as well. They're based in L.A. And, I mean, if you look him up, his resume is insane. So he started his career working at Tinsley designing tattoos. So when I was chatting with Doug about the Santa tattoos, he said, well, you remember Mike. Why don't you reach out to Mike and see? You know, maybe he would do it. And I'm like, oh, my God. I could never get that guy to do this. And he's like, well, you never know, you know.
Just ask.
Yeah, I could ask Aaron.
You already think you're getting a no.
Would,
so.
If she would reach out to, you know, if she would ask him. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to shoot my shot. You never know.
Right.
And I'm thinking, there's no way on earth.
Wayne Gretzky said something like that.
This guy is going to say, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And he did. And he did the
you
most
were wrong.
Amazing mock-up. And I will thank him forever because he made my department look so good.
Sure, sure.
They saw the first initial designs and they were like, holy shit. You know, and I sent off, you know, his sort of a little bio about him and who he was because they, you know.
Who is this magic?
Vetting people that, you know, and they're like, oh, wow. Like, you know, this guy's got Emmy nominations, wins, you name it. Like he's the real deal. So they see the sketch and they're like, oh,
get him in here.
Well,
get the man in here.
Rather than, you know, just doing this one piece of his upper full sleeve. And if we're going to do that, let's do two full sleeves and then we'll build it on his chest, back. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Fuck.
So,
fuck, I see the bane of your like, existence happening.
If Mike is available to do it, because it was, you know, it was a lot that had to be done, and it's...
Well, that's airbrushing, right? Like, I don't...
No, it was hand-drawn tattoos that had to get sent off to a shop to be built. So, Mike, I don't know, he designed a full bodysuit, essentially.
Jesus.
And we
that's
had
That's painstaking.
It, yeah, so... David wasn't available at the time, so we got the measurements from the costume department and had the tattoos made in a couple different sizes to be able to fit his body, right?
Sure, yeah.
But it had to sort of read like a full suit. So we had one day to do a test because that's David worked every day. So I think he was wrapping early, and I'm like, okay, well, we need about 5 hours for Doug and I to do this because he also had these scars all over him too. So we do it and we're putting them on and I'm like, nothing is lining up. This is crazy. Like they're, and I was using the bigger size, like this should have been bigger than the,
for those tree trunk arms he's got.
The original measurements. And I'm like, nothing is lining up. What the hell? And he's like, well, oh yeah. I think he said he gained like, David, if you're listening, don't shoot me. I think he said he had gained like 40 pounds from when we actually did the test to from those original measurements.
Oh, fuck.
So they remeasured his arms and they're like 2.5 inches bigger. And I don't think, I mean, I knew that he was working his ass off, but I think at that moment I was like, holy shit.
Those arms are big
you
arms.
You are like, I watched in an interview or I was reading and he said like this was the hardest role he's ever taken on physically for the amount of training he was doing.
Wow.
And at that time when I realized, my God, your arms have grown that much, you are working your ass off.
Yeah.
So anyways, we had that was sort of our one chance because he played every other day. There was like, I don't know where else we're going to have time to put this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, 3 to 5 hour test in here. So Stacy, again, the magical angel that she is, one day at wrap when David was done, we did a wig wrap because normally you would take a life cast like you would do if you're making prosthetics for somebody's head.
Okay.
And life cast his chest, his arms, and then send those off. But we didn't even have time to do that. So we did a wig wrap with saran wrap and tape, packing tape, and made molds of his arms, his chest, and his back. Sent those off, FedEx them off to Vancouver to the shop. And it's actually small world. One of the girls that I went to school with is working at Masters shop in Vancouver. And she was my other angel who was so amazing with making sure that all this stuff got done.
Wow.
And so they actually custom size once they got those molds.
Those professional high-grade molds.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
They fit everything into there. And then there was two amazingly talented artists that came from Vancouver and did the test on a body double.
Fuck.
For David. So they had somebody that had the same measurements. A man came in and they did the full test on somebody else. Because there was just no time for David to do it. And
fuck, I love what you people do.
It was like,
that is,
how are we going to make this work? Like,
it's quick thinking, high pressure, time sensitive. Mm-hmm. Everybody's watching. Hope to God it works. The fourth quarter, 2 minutes left. Like,
and it's got to look fucking amazing.
Exactly. Otherwise, everyone's going to be like, those fucking look stupid.
Well, and when you, like, you know, Mike's artwork, I'm like,
I for a second,
it looked amazing, and they all did. I mean, Mike's artwork was unbelievable. The application was seamless. I was so devastated because the day that that played, so I had blood, sweat, and tears go into, because it's a full body prosthetic. At that point, it's sure. Not just, you know, a quick makeup job. It's everything had to line up absolutely perfectly. And I got fucking COVID our last week of shooting, and I couldn't be there that day.
So my God.
And I tried. you would not believe. I'm like, what if you just got me my own trailer?
Yeah, yeah.
If David's fine with it, I'll wear three masks, and yeah. I'll still come in, yeah. And I'll do it, and I won't go to set, and I won't see anybody. But and they're like, Christy, go home.
Oh, my God.
Like,
pull your hands off.
I can't.
Oh, that's so heartbreaking.
Yeah, it was like, I don't have children, but I imagine like a newborn getting ripped out of their mom's arms, being like,
This is your baby. Yeah.
Like, what? I can't. Oh, and I was absolutely devastated. And I think I annoyed absolutely everybody in the hair and makeup department that day, being like,
Send me
pictures. How does it look? Send me pictures.
Is it okay?
Is David happy? Is he mad at me? Does he hate me?
Yeah. Like, what's David saying?
Can you tell him I'm sorry again?
Take a picture of David.
Oh my God, David knows you're sick. Like, it's fine. So I felt like I big time let my team down on that one. But a few of us caught it. So, I mean, what can you do, right?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't get it for 2 years. Like, I mean, and I did everything in my power not to get it. So at that point I was like, okay, the guilt is off. Like, I was raised Catholic, so everything I do is my fault. Yeah. And I got it and was like, fuck it. I didn't get a day off of work through COVID. I'm in construction. I'm in the construction game. We were protected. The government was like, that economy can stay, and that economy can stay, and fuck movies and the movie theater and the restaurant industry, because really, we don't need release. So yeah, no, it took me 2 years and not a day off of work from COVID. Like, I didn't get sick until this year. Like, I used my sick days all on COVID. It's fucking life. But for you, that sucks, because like, that's your moment. Like, that, that's a thing that you get to put in your bank and see, and fuck the accolades, fuck the claim. It's you getting to know that you did it, and being robbed of that sucks, I would imagine.
So, and it's when we went to go see the movie, it was kind of like a, oh shit. Like,
oh yeah.
So, and I mean, it's exciting because, I mean, Doug was amazing, and
sure.
He filled in for me while I was gone. And I know I wasn't worried by any stretch, but like.
You were pouty. You were a child. You wanted your toy.
My boyfriend can attest. I was fucking miserable. I was absolutely miserable.
And nothing will fix that.
No. I should be at work. Like, I can't believe it. I got fucking COVID. Like.
Yeah. And you. And
in this movie. Like.
I was just sitting there smirking and chuckling and laughing. And when when the icicle got used, the first icicle when it tosses the guy off the roof, I was like, oh, that's very Die Hard of you, David. And Karen? Sorry, Kath, what's David's wife, the producing partner? Sorry.
Kelly.
Thank you. Kelly. Kelly McCormick, David Leitch, correct?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. You guys do such good work. And then with the music, the way the music started to sound very John Hughes Christmassy.
Oh, absolutely.
Symphony, timpanies, you
and
know.
Then Brian Adams.
And
I mean,
oh, my God. Who, do you know whose idea that was?
No, but it was like. It
fucking
was
gold.
Perfection. I'm a. Maybe unpopular opinion. I'm a diehard Brian Adams fan.
I saw pictures of you. You went to the concert, didn't you?
I did.
Yes.
And I love the guy. I like. You can't have more fun with your clothes on than going to a Brian Adams concert. It is. And he's Canadian, right?
Right? Yeah, he's ours.
You know how Canadian people love Canadians.
Yeah, yeah.
He's amazing. No, so. And probably the only Brian Adams song I've never heard live. Like, why would he ever sing a Christmas song?
Exactly. Like, unless he's doing some sort of Christmas Carol kind of thing, which I've never seen him do. I mean, you've got Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Yep.
You've got Three Musketeers, right, with him and Sting, right? And then you've got Violent Night. Like, three of the best Brian Adams song moments.
So good.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that was...
And then, it was my boyfriend that was like, because he's a very big movie buff, like, far greater
What's
than
his
I
name?
Am. His name is Chris.
Okay, Chris. Hello, Chris.
So
come prove it on the show. We're more than happy to have you on.
Oh, but he just schools me. He says all the time, it's not even fair. Like, you don't know anything about anything when it comes to movies. But
Shauna and me have, like, I went last night by myself.
Did
you? Everybody's busy or had shit. And I'm like, that's fine. It's December. I said, I'm going either way because I want to see it and I need to see it. And I was like, Shauna, I got it. She's like, I'm going to stay home and drink wine and watch Unsolved Mysteries. And I was like,
that's the best night ever. I totally.
I can't
complain. I would be doing that if I didn't go to the movie. But I was getting shushed by Chris. He was like, shh. Because one of the girls in the hair department, Jill, was sitting beside me. And we're like, oh, God, remember that day? Like, you know, when you watch a movie.
You were having nostalgic moments. Yeah, for sure.
So, and then after, and I'm like, that's, you know, that's so unexpected. Like, that's
Chris,
so
I hear
weird.
You.
It was a Brian Adams. And he's like, it's so Deadpool.
It's so Deadpool.
And then I didn't even like, oh, you're right.
It's
that is so Deadpool.
What these guys do with humor and action and charm and disgusting kill shots, like it's they're taking the 80s action movie and spinning it on its head and they're having so much fun with it. And I can't imagine like a better movie to fucking work on than a 87 North production.
Well, and even I mean, if the way that they shot everything. If any other song, if there was like, you know, like crazy sound effects and like.
Yeah, for a big shootout.
It would
have
totally changed.
It
would have changed the whole barn sequence. Everything about it would have been different. But it's almost like there's like this sweet nostalgic, you know.
When she says.
And it's like there's like this almost weird romantic like.
Yeah.
He's like having a love affair with like. All these objects that he's like, off goes your head. And you're like, the irony of like a song like that. And I think that's, it makes it.
It does.
Even more unbelievable.
It's Celine Dion and Deadpool, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't belong there.
It's dead. And it's another Canadian artist.
Very, very, very.
People are getting their heads chopped off and there's like this Canadian crooner just melting your heart. I love it.
Next, Bublé is going to be in like a Wolverine scene with Deadpool, right? Like, you know it's going to happen.
John Wick 5.
Right? Put it
heads
in.
Heads are going to roll and Michael Bublé is going to be singing. He's going to be crooning the whole scene.
Oh, shit. I had a blast watching it. It seems that like you get to have a day or a couple hours with above the cast, right? You like your makeup chair, right?
Yep.
So, like, I have to ask, like, is he as big and cuddly and sweet? I mean, I'm sure he is, but what is David Harbour 2 feet from you compared to David Harbour Stranger Things or David Harbour Black Mass? Like, what's his process? How's he killing it?
I actually, nobody shoot me for this. I don't think I've ever seen anything with him in it.
That's okay.
I've never
you
watched.
You make it.
I've never
you're
watched
off the hook.
Stranger Things. I've never watched.
Oh, so you just have a David Harbour baseline. You don't have. Oh,
I'd,
that's even cooler. Okay.
I've never seen him in anything. So, and I don't get starstruck or anything. Like,
after a while, it becomes another
people,
day at the
right?
Yeah, totally.
So I just, he was only ever just David to me. And
that's,
I mean,
I love that.
I was in that guy's face constantly. I'm sure by the end of it, he was like, oh, thank God she got COVID. Like,
I can tell you where your freckles are, Christy.
The constant, like, yeah. It just, it stayed on amazingly. I will have to say that. Like, the first, I think because we did so many tests, in just knowing what it could withstand. And I mean, it's very delicate and they're very incredibly expensive.
What's
the
keeping
wig
it
the,
there? What are you
it's
guys?
It's literally just very delicate lace that the hair is.
Wow.
It's tied into and then it's glued on. But when we were in prep, David was like, okay, well, I want to know what it's like, but I have my beard, so I can't. So why don't you guys put a wig and a beard and a mustache and the whole thing on one of the stunt guys, and I'm going to fight him and I'm going to tug on it and see sort of how, you know,
wow,
how
that's
he,
really, yeah.
How he reacts. And I'm like, oh, how fun for the poor stunt guy who gets that.
That's the stuff I'm talking about. Like how he comes to Santa, because I've seen him in, like, I'm not a big Stranger Things fan, but I've seen him in enough things. And I love when he puts on a New York accent. Like it's just he's so fucking dangerous and big and menacing and very done Marvel. Like he's the father of Black Widow. Like what else can't this man do? But watching his process of like figuring out, he's like, okay, if I'm going to wear this, then I got to fight with it. Like that's a really neat way to take on a role.
Yeah, and so they sent a stunt guy to Stacey and I when we were working on Champions and said,
oh wow,
throw this on. He's going to come to your trailer.
Yeah,
get him in. Like if you've got any wig, any beard, any mustache, so that David can, he wants to do his training. He wants to grapple with this guy and see how it wears. So they sent him in there. We, you know, put it on and tried. I mean, if you do it properly and you take your time, but you never know, right? Like it's yanking.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
And,
yeah.
I mean, the scene when they're like, okay, so we're going to wrap the Christmas tree lights around his neck and going to choke him. And I'm like, oh God, like in my mind, I'm like, his beard. I'm like, is there any way that I'm like, no, I know they're not going to work around the beard.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in my mind, I'm like, please don't rip. We only have two of those. Please don't rip. And they'd yell cut. And I'd run in there, you know, with my light and my glue. And I was like,
we have connection.
Yeah. Like, you know, the team's running and we're checking all the edges and,
oh
but
my God.
I was shocked because, and I think David was too, because he kept saying that thing is going to get ripped off, and it never did. I mean, the edges, because he was sweating too, right? Like, you know, you're moving around. He had sort of like a padded, not a fat suit, but just to make him look bulkier.
Yeah.
And then all of his layers, plus his thermals, plus the leather jacket. And so he would sweat after.
No kidding. And then sweat is a makeup artist's worst enemy because it dissolves any sort of thing that's sticking. And that's when the mustache comes off.
And the blood.
Oh, yeah.
So because the blood kind of, especially when we would be outside, the blood is frozen and it doesn't allow the hair to as nicely lay
flat.
It's
stuck in, yeah, it's like, it's rigid.
Yeah, it's exactly. So the edges, and I mean, shockingly, that beard, except for the edges here where the mouth moves.
Yeah.
That
the worst parts of a beard, by the way, the ones that curl into your mouth.
Yep.
Oh.
Everything
God.
Stayed on like it, thank God.
It's the magic beard.
Thank God.
It, you know what it did? It had the same Christmas magic that he still doesn't understand how it works.
I guess so.
Right.
And I was
something in that sack was pulled out, put on his face.
And thank God, because I think he went into it thinking the absolute worst case scenario that it was going to get ripped off constantly.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I'm not going to lie. And I'm like, well, it's very possible. Like, you know, you're doing your own stunts. Like, this is going to be something that's going to be a labor intensive thing. And it's constantly going to need to be touched up. So that glue, I don't know. That's, I want to be buried with that glue when I go.
Is that one of your many, like, I'm keeping this in every kit from here on out?
It was
I retire?
Amazing. And that was, it was Doug's suggestion because it was not the one that the wig maker had recommended.
Okay.
Doug was like, trust me on this. We're going to try this other one. And we did.
And
Oh my God. Yeah, it was.
Beard, no movement.
So thank you, Doug, for once again making me look good.
Well, having him as a, like, I mean, having him as someone to look up to ask questions with, to work with. I mean, like, he's just a fucking gentle soul. So he like, I'll be honest, like, coming at this from a hobby perspective, from something that I was like, I had never started a podcast to interview people who work in film, that I was going to express my opinion that everyone needs to hear, right? That's quoted loosely, ladies and gentlemen. So, like, when I came to him, I'd always had this preconceived notion of, like, film people are, you know, like, they're mean, right? It's film, right? You know, and that's the old way of thinking. And when I met him, I was like, oh my God, you're such a fucking sweetheart. So having that constant wingman, so to speak.
Support, absolutely.
Whatever you want to call it.
Well, and it's, I mean, when you look at what he's done, and you, every once in a while, you know, we'll talk about something and he's like, oh yeah, back in the, you know, I worked with this person once on this show. And I'm like, what? I didn't know that. And I've known him for 15 years and I'm like, is there anything you haven't done? I mean, you've seen his resume on IMDb. It's insane.
Took me 3 episodes to get a third of the way through it.
Who has a resume like that?
Somebody who...
And then who is also, like, I mean, if he wanted to, he could just be the most ignorant prick on earth because...
Yeah. He's got the rights
to... I'm Doug Morrow. Look what I've done.
Yeah.
But he's the kindest, most humble, and I love working with him because he's not somebody that's like threatened by anybody. He will teach you what he knows. He will constantly help you learn things, and
he cares.
Some people like to keep people down because they don't, but
the
he will
of...
share every trick that he's got in his wheelhouse with you. He's kind, he's funny, he's so fucking talented. It's being able to work with somebody like that every day and then also being like, hey, bestie.
Yeah, let's go for a beer, right?
Yeah,
let's hang out.
It makes the worst day at work seem like nothing.
Sure, yeah. And in a world where your industry is constantly changing people in those positions, like, sometimes you luck out and you get, like, here you get to work with a lot of
the same people,
which is what's
time,
so magical about Winnipeg Film, right?
Yep.
You're like, see you on the next one, right? Or I'll run into you, like, oh, you're on this. Cool, I'm on this too. Like, that... That really helps keep a community in check and knowing how well it's working and who's
Absolutely.
Working well within it and what needs to be changed.
And
if
actors
anything.
Notice that too. They say it. We hear it all the time. They're like, oh my God, it's so nice to come into your hair and makeup trailer. And like, everybody's so nice to each other. Are they not nice in other cities? And they're like, oh, you know, you'd be surprised. There's so much competition, you know, in the bigger cities.
Yeah.
And
which that breeds contempt.
And we sort of have this mentality in the trail, like, no ego, no drama, no... It's just fun.
Yeah.
If you can't come to work and do what we do and have fun...
There's something wrong
with
you.
You're in the wrong business.
Yeah, you're broken.
And we take what we do very seriously, but we always have fun.
There's nothing in the history of the earth that says art and fun can't be mutual buddies on a project.
Absolutely.
If you're not having fun, I don't think you're really creating anything. But I may have spoke too soon on that. That might be a very bold statement. Someone's going to call in a complaint. Anyways, okay. I thank you. I want to know what you're watching because this is something that, like, I want to know who you like to be entertained by. Being someone who's made something that's entertained me, right? Like, your work, I've seen everything you've done. I've seen everything that Doug's done. Like, I watch you guys and, like, I think of you when I see it. And I'm like, oh, like, it's so much fun to now have acquaintances and people who I have access to talk to because I'm watching everything differently. But I'm curious, what are you and Chris are watching or what Chris puts up with that you want to watch
Chris
or what you put up with that he watches?
What he calls intelligent TV.
Oh, Chris.
And I watch a lot of things on the Hey You app, like Keeping Up with the Kardashians, I guess it's called.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
I am a junkie Housewives fan. But I don't know. When I'm working, I find my brain is so depleted by the end of the day.
Yeah.
And when you're on a big show, I mean, Violent Night, we were doing really long days.
16 hours, I guess.
And then, I mean, the pre-call just to get David, we shaved it down quite a bit. But just getting him into that and really all of those characters.
Did you get to what, probably about 3 hours?
No, I think I was asking for an hour at first for his full look.
Wow.
And Doug
That's the layman over here. I have no idea how long anything takes.
Yeah, and then I think we were about 2 hours for hair and makeup, and we ended up shaving it down to probably, I think Stacy was getting that wig on in 30 minutes, and I was maybe 35 with the beard.
And that's the things that make you guys so good at what you do, is that you're like, okay, we know this will take time,
yep.
But when we figure out how to round the corners and where to cheat and what we don't have to do, that's the brilliance that separates you from the lower tiers, right?
Like, well, and everybody getting along too, because there would be days that, you know, maybe they would start David in something and then have to pull him because he was going to have a meeting on FaceTime where his face was going to be moving. And I'm like, you know what, Stace, jump in, do the wig. Because, you know, you don't need his, he can be on the phone if he's doing that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we'd be like, you have to be adaptable to do that. And then, you know, Doug would do his blog after he'd go to blocking. And it wasn't like, I need to do
this.
These
are the cheat codes.
I'm getting my time. I want this. It was like, we very much understand and respect David's time too, because those were such long days for him.
Well, and I imagine he's got to be like, what's going on that he's promoting elsewhere that's coming out, mm-hmm. right? Like the idea of like, these are the things that I learned. I've been like, oh yeah, when that thing comes out, they're not doing anything else but that thing. You're a fucking idiot, Michael. Like they've moved, you've all moved on.
I think he was doing something for a play and trying to get that off the ground, that he was leaving Winnipeg to go to London to go do a play, I think. So, you know, it's that.
Like he's working while you're working 15
him. 15 or 20 minutes for Doug's process. If we can do that after, when David's got a little stretch of time, that's 15 more minutes that the guy can sleep, right?
Yeah.
And none of us are sleeping. So if one person gets to sleep, it should be David.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Because by the time they yelled rap, I mean, that was when a big chunk of our work started. We had all the stunt guys. I mean, at the end of the day, when everybody's covered in blood.
You know, 12 guys, I think.
They're all coming through and you're doing hot towels and cleanup and, you know, there's things getting smashed on their head. And, you know, they're fake ornaments, but you're still picking glitter out of their hair and cleaning them up. And, you know, all the ladies, because their looks, too, like there were such character makeups. It was like it was insane. At the end of the day, the trailer was just like one after another after another. And by the end of it, we had three Santas. We had a photo double Santa, a stunt Santa, and David. So at the end of every night, all those beards had to come off. They all had to be cleaned.
Wow.
They're very delicate. They had to be hand curled, reset, blocked, put away in the heater, and then come in sometimes, you know, after sleeping 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah.
By the time we got to the exterior stuff, we were shooting in East Selkirk, and it was, you know, you're in rush hour both ways, so it's taking me an hour and 15 minutes to get to work.
That's a lot of work.
And you're sleeping, yeah, like 4 or 5 hours. And then I go in on a heavy pre-call because I got to take all those pins out, style all the beards. You know, we'd go and try to preset some of the blood in too, if possible.
Sure, anything to save time.
To shorten the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And then allow it to dry a little bit. So, yeah, we had some incredibly long days on that show.
So no wonder you want to come home and watch what a rich housewife.
The Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Okay. And now, to Chris's point, yes, whatever he watches is more intelligent than that. It might not be intelligent TV by definition, but anything, and hang on, I'll say the same thing too, but I also watch really dumb, easy to watch shit. My stuff's the food shows, right?
Okay. Yeah.
So like we all have our cheesy reality television that we love because of either the tropey shit or the drama or the whatever. So I totally sympathize with wanting to watch this stuff. But what I have a question for you is how do you watch these women be such evil, evil geniuses to each other? Like, does it not get under your skin? Because, like, I would just be annoyed with, like, why are you treating this person this way? Like,
I think I enjoy it because it's so real. And what we do in film, it's so rehearsed and it's, you know, it's totally different. So I the aspect of that, like, and I mean, I'm sure it's scripted.
You know, it's set up. But not, yeah. But it's just more real than what you do.
Yeah, it's a different way of watching TV. And it's, I think movies are harder for me to watch now because, especially if it's something with like action or, you know, a lot of blood, I'm so focused on that. I watch for continuity. I don't even realize that I'm watching for continuity errors.
Yep, yep.
But I do. And then it kind of takes me out of it.
Well,
so I have like my comfort shows and I'm so bad for that. I've probably watched 30 Rock 87 times.
But it pays every time.
Because it never disappoints. So if I know that, like, I'm like, I might have 30 minutes in me one day before I'm just going to crash, I want to make that 30 minutes count. I know that I can put on any random episode of 30 Rock and, you know, it's like hanging out with an old friend.
I'm so impressed with this. Like, I have the fact that this is on camera, and what you're not seeing, listener, is that the cat hasn't, like, you haven't heard us mention Benny at all this show since we talked about her at the beginning. She's been sleeping the entire time in Christy's lap.
Cute.
Oh yeah. I'm very happy that this happened because
it's in my contract that I need a kitten on my lap for the whole time.
I would have failed our contractual obligations to each other had I not provided a cat to sleep in her lap the whole time.
She's so cute.
Okay. No, I totally get that. Cause I like watching, like, it doesn't matter who made the best cake. I just want to know, is it cake?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Like, oh, that. Yes. So David actually was the one who showed Stacey and I. I'd never heard of that show before.
Really?
And he's like, you guys got to watch that. And he pulled out his phone and I'm like, okay. And then there's this person going over, you know, with a knife. And I'm like, what's happening? And he's
so
like,
weird.
It's called Is It Cake or whatever. And he loved that show. And he would watch it on his phone in the morning or the evening, whenever we were working. And yeah, that's funny that you mentioned that one because I can't cook. I don't watch it. I don't practice it. But
we're huge foodies.
That's the only time I've ever seen that show is from him.
And I'm so glad that me and David like the same cake show. No, Shauna's a huge foodie. I mean, I love eating random, weird, third world stuff. Like, I'll put almost anything in my mouth. I'm going to scratch that. Try that again. I'll put anything edible in my mouth and try it. And so, like, we do raw almond that they do. They're bringing it back this year.
Yep.
Anyways, like, chefs we saw on Top Chef came one year. So we just went because we wanted to be starstruck by these two amazing chefs. And it was so funny. We sat at the head of the table and that's where they did their presentation. And nobody else knew who they were except us. So they realized real quick. They're like, these people care. Yeah. So they just basically... told us about their food instead of telling the table. And I was like, this is fucking awesome. So I totally get it. I like food because food is stupid. Food is easy. Food, like, you can do a lot in a cooking show. They can mm-hmm. be different themes. Shauna's favorite human, Andrew Zimmer, who has, like, gross foods. He travels around the world and eats, like, just weird, dark, awful shit. Yeah, I got him to...
Well, I'm a vegan, so... Okay, so you... Yeah. I'm not very exploratory when it comes to new food.
You don't step out of the garden too much,
I imagine.
Figuratively and
pretty
literally.
Much.
Yeah,
pretty
okay.
much.
What do you and Chris watch together? Like, what do you partake in any of those shows? Like, what's his intelligence TV? Now I got to know. I'm sure it's the same shit I watch.
Well, I mean, he honestly will watch just about anything.
I
can joke around that he has completed Netflix. Like, it's done.
That was a bold claim.
If, like, on a Saturday night, I'm like, let's watch a movie. I'm like, what about this? Seen it.
Yeah.
What about this? Seen it. I will go to the most random thing and think, there's no way. Like, let's watch this. He's like, I've seen it.
He's reaching into the far corners of the cinema abyss now. Because
everything.
A lot
documentary,
of...
Documentary, like, genre, it doesn't matter. He's seen it. But he is a diehard, like, Marvel.
Oh, nice.
So, The Mandalorian, like...
Okay,
you know,
so he's...
He watches all that.
Would
crap.
He like my lightsaber that I got in Disneyland?
He would like it, and I would probably see him watching TV, laying in bed with that.
True story. When Luke shows up in The Mandalorian in the first season, I got to watch this because I got really emotional. I was watching it, and I don't know if you... Did you watch Mandalorian with Chris?
No.
Okay, so...
I don't think I've ever seen a Star Wars movie.
That's perfect. You know what? You're talking to one person who's not going to chew into you for that. Because I get that scruffy nerf herders and 12 parsecs and talking droids and asshole pilots might not be everybody's.
It's not everybody's forte.
It isn't, right? And that's fine. I mean, we're better than you, but no, I'm just kidding. No, so they brought Luke back. Luke had never been seen on screen in the way that we wanted to see Luke, which was a younger version who was from the original three movies. After Return of the Jedi, Luke is off being a Jedi and honing his powers. That's the story that goes off that way. And when they set Mandalorian roughly around the time of 5 years after Return of the Jedi in that world, now we knew that Luke could cross through at some point.
Oh.
So when you find out the timeline of these fictional shows, then your brain starts to play tricks on you and you're like, oh, well, if this is then these people are alive, right? From this universe that's been built around it. You had your first three, which was 4, 5, 6, your second three, which was 1, 2, and 3, and your last three, which is 7, 8, 9.
They've made that many movies?
They've made 9 movies in the Skywalker saga. Right behind me here.
Jesus.
Yeah. So when the new Star Wars started to come out, there was like, well, where are you going to go with it? You've got the books that they wrote, which have like super fucking canon everywhere, shit that I don't even know. And then you've got, well, would you take these characters and roll with them still? So Mandalorian, Boba Fett, Andor that's out, they're all in this.
I know all those names.
Right?
Because
he watches them
when
all.
When I say
yeah.
what he watches.
Okay, yeah. Chris, you have an invite, bud. So the Mandalorian introduced a younger version of Yoda, which was the same character that trained Luke, which I'm sure you've heard him talk about.
Is that Grogu?
Grogu, exactly.
I only know that because Howard Stern's wife
loves
they
Grogu.
Adopted a cat and named him Grogu.
That's amazing.
Because they had one named Yoda already.
Okay, so then you understand. All right, well, look right there.
That's
look,
all I
look
know.
To your left. There's a little Grogu right there.
Oh, yeah.
Between the arms of my Muppet, of me. And an R2-D2. And whatever. So at the end of Mandalorian, Luke shows up. And I had that lightsaber in my hand just because I had just, like, you know, gotten it a couple months earlier. Actually, a year earlier. That's embarrassing. Still playing with it. But I had it in my hand, and as Luke came on screen and does what Luke does, I started to just flick it on and off, because I was trying so hard not to cry, and then I just started to bawl like a fucking giant man-child. Because it was the first time that the Luke that I wanted came back, and that lightsaber was, like under my chin. I was just sitting there watching.
Like, and that's, this. Like an artifact of that moment for you now.
It is. Like, it's got my tears on it because I was like, okay, we're back to my Star Wars. Like, that moment was like, because I don't really prescribe to the new 3, 7 was fine. 8 was a fucking train wreck. And 9 didn't know what it was doing. So I don't know where I was going with that. But Chris, you're invited on the show.
I understand that. I know that people like are
die hard. Yeah, we die for it.
Years ago, we were working on a movie with Aaron Paul and Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Oh, yeah. The place.
The Parts You Lose.
Parts You Lose, yeah.
Yeah. So Mary Elizabeth Winstead, I don't know if they're still together, but.
They are.
Ewan McGregor.
Yeah.
And so he came to set and he was visiting and.
Oh, Ewan was in town.
Mm hmm. And.
Fuck.
People were losing their minds. They're like, holy fuck. And I'm like, I know. Trainspotting. Like.
That's awesome.
And. And they're like, no, Star Wars.
Obi-Wan,
like,
Kenobi.
What? Like, and I got shamed up and down, like, constantly. I'm like, I've never seen it, okay? I'm sorry. Like,
choose life.
He's Trainspotting for me. That's.
He's a lot. He's Obi-Wan in the ether of pop culture. Like, he can't go anywhere without being it. But I get Trainspotting. Right. I get the one he did with Alicia Silverstone, the crime caper one where he stuffs Alicia Silverstone in the trunk.
Oh, yeah.
Something. I don't know. Like he's had a really good career.
Yeah.
I loved him on Fargo, which I know was supposed to shoot here. I just he can't everywhere he goes. It's going to happen because he was he was the perfect younger version of Sir Alec Guinness, who played the original Obi-Wan. Oh. Like, it is just...
See, all that's lost on me.
And that's fine. Like,
that's when Chris would say, you don't even deserve this. It's not even fair. Like, why did you get to meet him? You don't even care about him.
I imagine he's a lovely man.
Yeah.
I think he's the most beautiful man in Hollywood. Like, I could stare at Ewan McGregor for days. I wouldn't even want to talk to him. I would just want to look at him.
His accent is amazing.
The Scottish accent with the ability to sing.
I'm Scottish, so I... Okay. Yeah.
So Moulin Rouge for you is a thing?
Do not have... You know what? I've never seen that movie. The amount of movies that I have not seen is shocking. I have not even seen Die Hard. So when everybody was making their reference, I'm like, maybe I don't even want to watch this movie because... It might just throw me off a little bit more because I don't want to lean to a bias to like,
yeah,
you know, I had it in my head of the vision that for David that I wanted him to look. And I just didn't want to watch anything that was going to
influence
derail
that. Yeah.
My, yeah.
I
don't even know. Is there an actual Santa Claus in Die Hard?
No.
I'm going to get assaulted by your viewers.
No.
For admitting this out loud.
No.
I've never seen Die Hard.
I've never seen Toy Story.
Neither have I.
We got someone on the show who's never seen Schindler's List.
I have seen Schindler's List.
We have someone on the show who's never seen a Matrix movie. We play Admit It. We play a game called Admit It where we admit the movies we haven't seen.
I get shit from Doug as well for this.
Doug gave me shit for not seeing Citizen Kane, which made me get back in. I owe Doug everything to my classic movie phase where I'll pick up a black and white or an old 30s, 40s.
Because
that's his jam.
That's his jam. He loves it.
It's totally.
But like, you name it, The Godfather, Rocky, Planet of the Apes, like all of these greats that he'll like. He has an ongoing list in his phone for movies he wants me to watch.
He should make a letterbox
like,
for you.
You can just keep doing it, but I won't watch them.
To scream at someone for not watching a thing or to get upset, I mean, I understand Doug's passion. Like, I can see it. But I don't think the right reaction is to be like, what the fuck is wrong with you? You've never seen Rocky? Like, I know I've got a cardboard cutout right behind
me. Oh, my God, you do?
You know, and, like, that's me. But, like, if it didn't speak to you, to yell at you, to be like, that painting isn't beautiful to you, that song isn't beautiful, that's fucking taste.
But it's also, I feel like there's...
It won't make you a better makeup artist if you haven't seen Star Wars.
Yeah, there's sort of, I think the majority, I just realized I have holes in my socks. And these are Chris's socks, by the way. So
Chris has holes in his
socks. I've never been like, I find that there's the majority of the people that work in film are diehard cinema. Like,
sure.
You name a movie, they'll tell you what year it came out. They'll tell you who the cinematographer was. They'll tell you who the director was. They'll tell you...
I'm one of those people. That's my game.
They're like
here.
Encyclopedias of
more often than not.
And everybody, like I'm still shocked that you know people that from lots of different departments, you know, people that are like props or locations or grips or you know any random department is like, oh, I'm making a short. I'm like, oh wow, I didn't know that you're a filmmaker too. Like, there's so many people who are so passionate about film, and that's why they work in film. But I don't want to say I'm not one of those people, but I don't know how to make a movie. I mean, I can definitely.
I don't think you're giving yourself enough credit. I think you've seen.
I know
it.
When they do things when I'm like, why the fuck are you doing it that way? Like, I know I just do makeup, but I know that this is not, doesn't seem right.
Oh, don't discount like
I
that.
I have no desire to make a movie of my own. I wouldn't know how. I don't know how to write a script. I don't have that same passion. For me, it's just about. My job and makeup. Like, I love.
Yours is targeted and you broke the mic. No, I'm just kidding. You can't bring them. I have spares. I think yours is targeted. I don't think you have. I think you're saying that because you don't want to make a film and you're not a locations person, that doesn't make you a filmmaker. Where you're a filmmaker in the makeup department and your jam is makeup. You just don't cast as wide a net.
No. I don't at all.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Some people like fishing for a specific kind of fish.
Doug is so passionate about film. He loves it. He's the books that he has about makeup and film too. Like he can.
I've seen his shop. It's fucking
unbelievable,
stupid.
And I'm blown away by his knowledge by it. But mine just doesn't. I fall short a little bit on the.
It doesn't change.
I kind of stay within my department for the.
You're in your lane.
Yeah.
That's fine. There's a reason.
You will never watch a movie made by Christy Gregg ever. It's not gonna happen.
Fuck that. I watched one last night. You made it.
Not just, by me.
Okay, but don't put too much effort in.
My name will be in the credits, but in a very different capacity.
Sure. But like again, nobody ever made a film by themselves. So
true.
You're all filmmakers. It's a collective effort. Yes, shit lands on shoulders in department heads.
True.
There's reasons there's department heads and departments, right?
Very true.
It's just don't think that because you weren't a director that didn't make you a filmmaker.
And I just have no desire, nor do I want to be an actor. I want no part
no.
in that. No, I want to stay behind the camera. That's that. Yeah.
It took me forever to put these cameras in here to start because I'm like I don't want to look at myself. I don't want to look at this face.
I see, and I forgot that was there. Now I'm nervous again.
Yeah, yeah.
When I still well, we're approaching in the end, so it's fine. Doing makeup when I'm aware. When I'm like, oh my God, I'm standing in front of the camera waiting to do finals, I'm like,
get me out of here.
Oh God, people are watching me. And yeah. I like completely tense up. It's so weird. I have no desire to want to be in the spotlight in any capacity.
I didn't either. And then we started doing live shows. And I was in performance theater. Like I did musical theater and dancing when I was younger for like grade 6 to like 22.
Oh, wow.
So like, some modern, some tap, lots of hip hop. Thought I could Backstreet Boy.
Yeah,
I can do the chair dance from As Long As You Love Me. No joke. I mean, I might need 20 minutes to warm
I can
up.
Too.
Really?
Yep.
Okay, that's yeah. it's not yep. like I met Shauna grinding at the Palomino, like acting like I was NSYNC one night, like
I
popping.
I have a Backstreet Boy tattoo.
Really?
No, that's a whole other story for a whole other episode.
That's fine.
Actually, I will never tell anybody that.
We can have a different episode. Totally fine. Speaking of which, I think this is the perfect time to send you packing and say thank you.
Thank you for having me.
You have a good time?
Yes.
Good. Not, I mean, nervous because you know the camera's there, but yeah, no, you're a perfect podcast guest. Now
aww.
it's you and Doug at the same time.
And Stacey.
And Stacey, yes.
Seriously.
Like, and we can do whatever we want. Like, I want people, the whole thing of the interviews is to let people know in their backyard this shit's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Next time we have you on, it's like, hey, we introduced you to everybody. Now let's talk to you. Like, everybody, like, you can be a part of the show where we share opinions and argue dumb shit and make up scenarios and have fun and whatnot. And then, you know, tell Chris, he's more than welcome to come on and be like, listen, let me tell you about this thing she should be watching.
You know what? The last recommendation that he made was Zach Galifianakis, that show Baskets.
Yes, it is funny.
So I started watching that, and I loved it.
I'm a
coon. And then found out that Zach was cast on my last movie.
Winner.
Yeah, so, and once I work with somebody, I can't ever watch them in any.
Why?
I had to stop, because it takes me out of it. Because it's hard for me to see that person as.
That's reverse.
So I will revisit that show, because I really liked it, and I think that Zach is the funniest person in the entire world.
Okay, when winter comes out, we'll have you back before winter. But when winter comes out, we can actually talk about it.
And
I need to know about Wolfpack. I need to ask you some questions about the man with the pager.
So, yeah, I will go back to that one. I will.
You will.
Not anytime soon, but
that,
I will.
I can see that because you don't want to put an impression of Baskets onto Zach while you're working with Zach.
Yeah.
You want Zach to be Zach while you're transforming Zach into a character. That makes sense. I can see that. Like there's certain things I don't want to watch because they remind me of a girl or a buddy or some awkward time. And I'm like, nope, not doing it again.
Yeah. Cause right now, like it'll be a while for him to not be my pal Zach who loves gardening. Like
that doesn't surprise me one bit.
That's what we talked about.
Oh my God. Yeah, okay.
You know?
All right. I don't want to get sued, so I don't want to ask those questions just yet. I know NDAs. I sign them every time you guys come to the office. Ladies and gentlemen, there you go. We've had a lovely conversation with Christy Gregg.
Yes.
And Benny, Benedict Cabbage Patch. Uncle
She's
Ben.
Coming home with me.
She's, I mean, Shauna's probably upstairs. So two of you have a conversation.
I can run fast. These legs are short. I can make a clear cut. I have a fast car. We're gone.
Oh my God. Oh, now Benny's up. Now she's got the zoomies. She's gonna go nuts. So yeah, I'm sure you'll hear more about the kitten now that she's made her way into the production studio, ladies and gentlemen. If this is your first time listening, please stick around to the end of the show. There's like an end credit trailer. You know, the funny part at the end of a Marvel movie where you can listen to all of the promotion stuff that we ask you to listen to here on the show, knowing that we're self-produced. We don't get paid to do this. So if you feel like supporting the show, there's a couple ways to do that. Number one is just subscribe. This is your first time. That would be cool. Then we can impress you with a couple more episodes. This is your many time. Thank you again for always listening to another episode. Yeah, you should come to We Johnny's on December 16th, ladies and gentlemen. We have a live debate. We're doing Secret Santa. So we're all sitting down there, Christy, and we're going to argue which one of us can shop for our favorite movie character the best.
Just don't ask me to glue a beard on anybody, no. And I might be there.
Come drink. Come hang out in the audience. Come call us out. That's the whole point of this night. 8 p.m., doors open. 9 p.m., show goes live. We've got half night stand-up. So Jimmy from the show and Milan Horansky and Sarah Jane will be doing stand-up.
Nice.
And then the second half of the night, we're going to be doing the debate. So cheap drinks, cheap snacks. It's at Wee Johnny's. I think it's like $4.50 for a double. It's like super, it's stupid fucking cheap for doubles there. Yeah, they have really great drink prices.
Oh.
So if you want something to do this Christmas and you want to listen to us mass debate for your pleasure, that's our catchphrase.
I like it.
Mass debate. Then December 16th, $10 at the door. Gets you an hour of comedy and an hour of us and lots of fun. And if you've been to one of these, you know what we're talking about. And we encourage people to call us out on the show and like be like, I think this is wrong and I'll only tell you why. And then we'll put you on the recording and then we put
it
out there in the world. So the first one we did got
heated.
No, not heated. Just like we all got drunk and we all just screamed at each other and it was a fucking jolly old time. Somehow it all
sounds
made
like
sense.
A rap party. I love it.
Yeah. No, it's very, yeah. You're in good hands. So that's happening December 16th. Wee Johnny's, 177 McDermott in the Exchange in Winnipeg. If you're from the surrounding area, come on down. You can check out Christy's credits and all the movies that she's done. Run is a great one. I love that one. Orphan, Orphan 2. First Kill, thank you. I'm getting hungry. When the blood sugar drops.
Champions, that's going to be in theaters in March.
Really?
23rd, I believe.
Oh, nice. Yep. Nice.
Keep drive for that one. That is going to be.
That's a lovely story.
It is. And it is. It's funny.
Yeah?
It is funny.
Is it Kingpin, Fairly Brothers funny? Is it Fairly Brothers funny?
It is. And it's. There's no words. That it's by far the most amazing thing I think I've ever worked on.
Oh my God, really?
An amazing group of people. Yeah.
That's all. You get to work with fucking
It's
Woody.
Heartwarming. It's funny. It's, yeah. I mean, Cheech Marin, Woody Harrelson.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Caitlin Olsen. How do you?
full house?
No, from It's Always Sunny.
Oh my God. Sweet D.
Sweetie.
That's right. I did hear that she was in town filming something. That's what it was. Okay. Yep. Oh, my goodness. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Got something to look forward to. And Violet Knight, that's playing right now.
Go see it.
My guest has been Christy. I've been Michael Petro. You can say bye, Christy.
Bye, Christy.
Bye, everybody. Watch all the movies. See you next week.
Spanish ladies.